Market View on Money FM 89.3.
This was quite the momentous day, actually, for markets, for Singapore's local markets. And forget the month that was. Thursday saw brisk activity coming from two major sources. The lifting of the trading halt of Keppel Corporation and Sembcorp Marine after both companies announced a deal that would see Keppel Offshore and Marine merged with Sembcorp Marine. And also the official day where Yangtze China Financial Holdings finally started trading on the local bourse at 1 p.m. Singapore time. And these two events seem to have shaken things up for the Straits Times Index and the SGX in different measures. Of course, we're also seeing the SGX also having a rather shaky start to the second quarter, and also some questions not just coming from the Russia-Ukraine war and rising inflation, but also the recent lockdowns across China that could also pose some headwinds for the region. To help us recap all of this and perhaps try to set things up as we head into the new month, we are joined once again at the end of April by Mr. Terence Wong, the CEO of Azure Capital, is on the line with us to help us parse through this very busy Thursday. Terence, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you're in the line, and I hope you've caught your breath, because we had a lot of action today, didn't we?
Hardly caught my breath. Hi, JP. Good to hear from you.
Indeed. Now, Terence, you know, I'll just get straight into it. And, you know, I flipped a coin. I'm going to start off with Sembcorp Marine and Keppel Corporation. And they started trading today. And after roughly a year or more than a year of what was said was market chatter and speculation, it seems that they've come to a possible deal to merge the offshore and marine unit of Keppel Corporation with Sembcorp Marine. But as we saw today, by the movements today, we saw Keppel Corporation close about 3% higher at $6.86, but Sembcorp Marine plunging by 17.5%. Were you as surprised as I was by how deep the decline was for Sembcorp Marine when trading started today? Share with us your thoughts and your impressions of how they did and the announcement of the deal.
Well, when I looked at the deal, it intuitively looked like it's going to be a lot more positive for Keppel than it is for Sembcorp Marine. For Keppel, I mean, you immediately have some realizable value of about, what, $4.9 billion from the combination, right? And there's $500 million in cash. Whereas for Sembcorp Marine, after the deal, there's going to be yet another round of dilution. I think that's 3 times in 3 years. So perhaps some of the investors say enough is enough. Because prior to that, I believe many of the Sembcorp Marine investors or those coming in for the punt would think that, you know, the payday is near. They've already, like you said, we've been waiting for a year for this deal to happen. And when the deal was supposed to be struck, I think investors were expecting Sembcorp Marine investors to be the beneficiary, whereas Keppel wouldn't have benefited almost as much, given that they are going to be the acquirers. But with this deal, it seems like, you know, the tables have been turned.
Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, the big selling point of the deal is that you're going to create an even stronger offshore and marine unit, and arguably some say might be the biggest offshore and marine unit in the world, or one of the biggest at least. But on the other hand, you did point out that significant share dilution for Sembcorp Marine. Now, we have about 5.5-6 months before before the scheduling of EGMs, where both shareholders' bases might actually vote for this. I mean, is that enough of a selling point to have that bigger offshore and marine group formed as a selling point for them to approve of the merger? Or do you think that that the potential dilution might cause some shareholders to balk? What are your thoughts, Terence?
JP, remember we were talking about a Keppel SPH deal,
right?
A year back, and then and at the point in time we were saying that, you know, it's really too early to tell. Anything can happen, and really things did happen. It went against Keppel. Well, in this case, again, I would say anything can happen. You know, there's still a few more months to when the investors come into vote.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Terence, let me shift over to the other big story right now before we take a broader look at the Straits Times Index. And of course, a big day for Yangtze Chang Group. And we saw the Yangtze Chang Financial list on the SGX. And they were also automatically listed on the SCI. Now, it's not every day you see a unit listed on the bourse and added to the blue chip index. Share with us your thoughts about the merits of the spinoff and how unique this set of events are given your experience on the markets.
Well, Yangtze Chang spin-off, I believe, is very much a value-unlocking move. this is something that we see from some of the big companies, typically coming from the Temasek-linked ones. Temasek companies have been, you know, like trying to extract value, and I think that that's very positive. So they've been leading that. Other private, relatively large companies that are also doing the same include the likes of Olam, which is Temasek, I mean, which is majority linked by Temasek, and there's also Jabfa. Now back to this Yangtze Jiang financials, right? With this financial investments being spun off, for Yangtze Jiang itself, the management, I think, could very well focus on the core shipbuilding business. And the management of the newly established entity could then focus on making strategic investments in the shipping industry, new economy sector, student housing, data centers, as well as, I think, clean and new energy. These are some of the sectors that they mentioned that they'll be looking at. So there will be two very distinct businesses, and investors can now get to decide on what they want instead of like putting it together. Because conglomerate models, are becoming less and less sexy. Companies, particularly the big listed companies, have been streamlining themselves, and I think that this is one step in the right direction.
Right. I did note today that Yangtze Jiang Financial, though, on their first day in school, if I may call it that, today closed at about 62 cents per share. Now, some have pointed out that's a significant discount from their net tangible assets per share at about $1.75 a piece, I believe, by some estimates. Did this catch you as much by surprise as it did me? If you've noticed, Terrence, this has been quite the surprising day for myself. So where it closed at that significant discount from their net tangible assets, is this a bit, did this catch you also by surprise as it did, say, someone like myself?
Well, I don't think it's very much of a surprise. I mean, this is, after all, a new entity. It's not small. And I think that, you know, investors would probably take some time to understand what is behind it. So it is not unexpected to see quite erratic trading until perhaps, you know, the management comes out to speak to investors about it. They go on the roadshow, and the institutional as well as the retail investors start to get a better understanding of it. There are many, many similar cases where, you know, companies with that are not as familiar with the market, you know, at the onset, you will see some erratic trading.
Mm-hmm. Now, Terrence, one of the big things that caught people's eye is that if Yangtze Jiang Financial is able to stay on the Straits Times Index and we review who has the smallest market cap, someone might have to be removed. We talked earlier on about the likes of, say, ComfortDelGro, for instance, being at risk. Without trying to preview or talk about who might be booted out, what is at store, or what could happen if one of the STI members has to make way for Yangtze Jiang Financial? Could there be some prolonged selling or some downside for that particular stock, especially if certain investors who track the STI might have to adjust their positions? Help us understand if there's any potential headwinds that a company on the STI might have to face if they have to make way for Yangtze Jiang Financial.
Well, if a company is booted out, typically, there will be a knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
There will be investors, because some of the ETF guys or some of those that are buying into the index or mirroring the index, they will have to follow suit, right? So there could be some selling. But it's not altogether bad news. You know, when they're selling the stock, if the fundamentals prevail and they continue to improve, that could prove to be a good buying opportunity. And because it was once already on the blue chip index, there's great recognition. And I believe that, you know, in today's world, investors are not dumb. When there are good bargains, they will look into it. So, like I said, even if they were to be knocked out of the index in the near term, it's not very much of a big deal if the company continues to be good. But there are companies that are on the index, they have been languishing, right? Mm. And they deserve to be knocked out.
Okay.
Right. And those companies will probably continue to hit south.
Any companies that you'd like to mention are worthy of being perhaps under review, Terrence?
No. Those under review will probably be, you know, those on the 41st position in terms of the market cap. So I think investors can actually take a look at those, or beyond the 30th position. A lot of them, those are the ones that will be at risk. But again, doesn't mean that being knocked out doesn't mean they're bad. right? Mm-hmm. So always focus on the fundamentals.
All right. We're still speaking to Mr. Terrence Wong, the CEO of Azure Capital here on Money FM 89.3, recapping the month that was. Terrence, the big thing that's really been driving optimism for markets and Singapore in general actually is the gradual reopening and easing of travel restrictions. But there's now new risks emerging from China's recent lockdowns. And this could be proved challenging, not just for supply chains, but also sectors depending on the return of Chinese tourists. Top of mind, you have Genting Singapore, the hospitality REITs among them also. The question I have, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, will the reopening be constrained somewhat for the long haul if we see China's zero COVID policies maintained for the foreseeable future and Beijing decides to double down? How much could this perhaps blunt any hopes of the reopening for these particular sectors that are thirsting for a return of tourism back to the island?
Okay, if you look at the pre-COVID numbers, right, the arrivals, top five countries include China, Australia, Indonesia, India, Malaysia, right? And China was in pole position, accounting for over a fifth of the tourist arrivals. So if they are not allowed to travel here, then definitely there will be an impact. But year on year, we are definitely going to see a very, very strong rebound with or without China. Because back, remember last year, practically everybody was still locked down, right? So we're going to rebound. But to see a meaningful rebound back to where we were pre-COVID, we definitely need China.
Okay.
And so hospitality stocks may still recover. The reopening place will still continue to get back to life, but it would not be at the same levels as it was pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm. But at least a reopening that some reopening is better than others. Finally, Terrence, you know, as if we just have a little bit of time to catch your breath, because tomorrow before the opening bell, we're expecting the big three banks, DBS, UOB and OCB, set to release their first quarter report cards. What trends are you looking out for among these banks, and what are some of your expectations before they release their results?
Well, I think the NIM margins will still be positive. I mean, considering that, you know, it's inflationary environment, the rates will continue to appreciate, and this is generally positive for the banks. One area where there could be a potential hiccup, and you could see it already in the U.S. banks, is the trading income. Trading income will very likely come off, like we saw in the U.S. banks. JP Morgan, for instance, recorded a loss for this segment following a credit valuation adjustments and market volatility. So this segment trading portion, I think, accounts for less than 10% of the banks, but it will be a dampener on it. So I think to look out for tomorrow's numbers, probably you want to look at, you know, how NIM is expected to improve, what the management guidance is going to be, and whether there is an impact from trading side.
All right. A lot to look out for, Terrence. I do hope you get some rest tonight, because it seems that we'll be quite busy even tomorrow. Terrence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.3, helping us break down the very busy and frisky Thursday that we saw and the month that was. Terrence, always a pleasure to have you on the show. We look forward to next time we can have a conversation. Meanwhile, stay safe, sir, and I hope you have a good evening and a good rest ahead of tomorrow's equally busy day.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.